saw.
Our little towns ain't on the map, but they raise boys who sure can scrap. If you don't think so, ask a Jap.
Down in Arkansas.
Lifebuoy presents the Bob Byrne Show, bringing you latest news of those kinfolk in Van Buren, more doings of the Arkansas Traveler, White Jones and his city slickers, and Bob's special guests, George Burns and Gracie Allen. Now, here he is himself, Bob Byrne.
Well, thank you, folks. Thank you. You know, before I start talking here, I just thought maybe you might be interested in a little sidelight, little interesting sidelight that I heard on the shortwave just before I come down here. Now, it seems that some of these Russian soldiers got ahead of the rest of their company, and so they went across the line, and they surprised a bunch of German officers that were in a little building. And when these Russian soldiers came crashing into this building, all these German officers, they jumped up and they saw these Russian soldiers with their guns drawn, and all these German officers jumped up and held their hands over their heads. And one of the Germans says, what are you doing here? And one of the Russian soldiers says, well, we come here to talk for Joe. Well, now, you know, if them Russian boys will just keep on for a while longer, pretty soon it seems like most of us are going to be over there helping. You know, it's surprising, and I'm awful proud of it, but almost every one of the men folks in my family are in the Army now. That's it, all except Uncle Slug. That's my drinking uncle. That ain't what kept him out. He ain't in there because he was classified as 4M. That means that he's married four times. At his draft board, they just figure that anybody that's been married four times ain't got no fight left in. So Aunt Puny, that's his wife, she just keeps him around the house to kind of run errands for her. And of course, she's making all the money now. Aunt Puny's doing awful well. She works in a laundry. And you'd be surprised. You know, in just a short time, Aunt Puny has worked herself up to the second tub. The other day, she gave Uncle Slug some money. I want to tell you, that rationing business has kind of caught them off guard down there. And they didn't have no food in the house. And so Aunt Puny gave Uncle Slug some money and told him to go to town and get some food. And Uncle Slug says, well, what in the world am I going to buy? He says, don't you know that the best things in life are free? So anyhow, she shooed him out with the money, and you know, 3 days went by, and Uncle Slug didn't show up. He didn't know where in the world he could be. And they were just about to starve to death. They didn't have a bit of food in the house. But on the fourth morning, here the children all came running up to the house, and they told Aunt Puny, that's their ma, they said, Ma, we just found Pa, and he's been drinking again. And Aunt Puny says, well, how do you know he's been drinking? And so the children says, well, he's passed out, and says he's laying down here by the creek, and he's got one head on the bank, and the rest of them is laying in the water. And they said he must have been laying there all night because his boots are full of catfish. And Aunt Puny says, well, children, you go down there and pull your paw out and get the catfish out of his boots and set him again. Well, sir, you know, I saw something in the paper this morning about Spike Jones, the city slickers. It kind of let me in on something about him and his bunch that I never knew before. Now, this paper calls Spike Jones and his city slickers the band that plays for fun. Well, now, Spike, I didn't know you boys played for fun. I thought all the time this was just a money-making scheme with you boys. But anyhow, go ahead and have your fun, Spike. And play that number, Sheik of Araby, will you? Go ahead.
¶¶ of Araby. Your love belongs to me. At night when you're asleep, into your tent I'll creep, and the stars that shine above will light our way to love. You rule this land with me, the Sheikh of Araby.
Them follow me around. Not bad. Even wiser than all the other sheiks. They beg to kiss my rosy cheeks, and that in fact, it's good I found. I'm a cat. Then I'm laying down to sleep. I'm counting girls instead of sheep. From my harem, I can't scare them out. Why should I? They're beauties of all races, and some have pretty faces. I'm the sheik who knows what love is all about.
That was Spike Jones and his City Slickers playing the Sheik of Araby. And now, Bob, if you don't mind, I'd like to add my little contribution to the evening's entertainment.
Well, I don't mind, Dick, but it seems like my uncle slugged up.
Really?
Last week, when you started to tell one of your favorite famous stories, he was right in the middle of taking a little something or other to ward off snake bite. And he said you talked so fast he sort of caught the spirit of the thing, and before he knowed it, he'd emptied the whole jug.
Well, Bob, I'll try to go a little slower tonight. This is the story of Androcles and the lion. It seems once upon a time there was a guy who married the king's daughter. The king went right in for to get out of town. So he went, was looking at a good wedding.
Here we go
nice
again.
Boy showering away he went. He was walking around the woods and got night. He came to go to sleep. And there was a lion in there. A lion crying. What's the matter? Because the lights are going to fall off. And oh, it's nothing. I'll fix it. Slept the next morning for the lion. And the lights come out. You see the boy started walking around. The five guys out with their spears. And he hollered, hoop! Oh, he stops the fellow. Stops. Hey, you come on back. And the king wants to see what like that. The king was like, sure, following me. Put him down. The next morning, the fellow was like, waving flies and all. Except the fellow seemed to put it on a face. The lion came out. Pook him like that. And my God, it was a lion. The guy told the father, well, surely got to see him. So the king said, you can marry my daughter. And so he didn't. He took a nice life boy show and went to the wedding the next morning. And that's the end of my story.
Well, I thought the end would never come, man. Dick, I don't know what else happened to the hero of your fairy story, but I do know he took three complete life boy baths inside of 15 seconds. Now, what I'd like to know is, did he dry himself off between times?
Well, no, Bob, you got the story all wrong. The truth is, this fellow enjoyed taking his life boy bath so much, he had a stall shower built in his office. Every time his business worries got him down, he'd just drown his troubles in a nice, brisk, refreshing life boy shower. It worked wonders.
Yes, I've often thought of putting a shower in my office, but I ain't got no office.
Well, of course, not everybody can afford such a luxury as that, but they certainly can afford the luxury of a life boy bath at night, right after work, before dinner. It peps you up like nobody's business, makes you feel wide awake to enjoy a real lively evening.
Yeah, but how about getting you clean?
Clean? Why, Bob, that rich, creamy life boy lather does such a job it even gets after grimy factory dirt, ground-in dirt from machines.
Say, I bet life boy's popular with war workers, ain't it?
You bet, and Bob, I'll let you in on a little secret. Life boy's the most popular bath soap with the armed forces.
Oh, Dick, that ain't no secret. That's a fact.
Down at the newspaper office, our old friend, the Arkansas Traveler, is trying to write an editorial for his paper. I say that he's trying to write it because it seems that they're tearing down a building right next door, and every so often... Hey, you hear that? That's what I mean. Well, let's drop in on the Traveler and see how he's making out with his editorial.
Well, now let's see what I got here. As we write these lines, we can hear the sound
hey,
of...
Hey, Traveler!
Doggone it, Doy. I'm trying to get something written here.
Oh, excuse me.
Well, listen, Doy, as long as you're here. How's this? As we write these lines, we can hear the sounds of destruction as the workmen tear down the ancient walls of the building next door to our office.
Very good. Very good.
Well, thank you. Only trouble is, that's all I got so far. Every time I get an idea and start to write, they let go of the landslide of brick next door.
Well, it's all quiet now.
Yeah. Well, now, let's see. I might go on like this. We regret the passing of the old landmark, which used to be our town post.
I told you, folks, every time I try to write...
It'll stop in a minute!
What say?
I say it'll stop any minute!
It did.
Yeah, well, now, let's get another line written while it's quiet. We regret the passing of... Doggone it, if it ain't one thing, it's another. Come in.
Excuse me, sir, but I was told you were the editor.
Well, I won't be the editor long if I don't get this editorial finished.
Well, I'm sure that I have something that'll interest you tremendously. I represent the Amalgamated Syndicate of North America, and we've just added a new feature which your paper can't possibly do without.
Well, I don't...
This is the very latest thing in columns, and I'm sure it'll be as popular as Eleanor Roosevelt's column, My Day. It's being written especially for all those hundreds of thousands of workers who are now employed on the swing shift.
What's the name of it?
My Night.
Well, now, if you just take this door to the left and walk down the long corridor, then turn right, go through a hallway, then through the door, you'll be taken care of.
Where will I find myself?
In the street. Now, let's get back to my editorial, Dewey. Where was I? Oh, yeah. We regret the passing of the old landmark. Well, it's no use, Dewey. If I can't do my work, I can at least have more fun than I'm having now. You hold down the desk, Dewey. I think I'll go out and join the rest of the town and watch them tear down that building. Records, sure know their business.
Hello, Chadwick. How do?
Who's that? I can't hardly see who you are for the plaster dust in the air.
Harvey Thomas, the postman.
Oh, well, how are you, Harvey? Taking a last look at the old post office building, are you?
Yep. I worked here, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. I was a young man then. Just had my first appointment as a letter carrier. My. All those letters I sorted here and carried to the people who waited for them. Good news and bad news. Yep. But, you know, it's when there's no news at all that it's hard on folks.
Well, if people don't write, you can't help that.
Oh, but sometimes they do write and letters go astray. Oh, not very often, mind you, but sometimes.
Say, look here, Harvey. Seems to me like you've got something on your mind.
Well, yes. You see, I was inside the old building just now and, well, I found something. And look here.
Well, I declare... an old newspaper all wrapped up for mailing.
I found it in a wall in there where they bricked up some windows years ago. Now, this mail must have slipped from a sorting table and laid in the wall all this time.
Well, the news in this paper wouldn't do the subscriber much good now. Mind if I open the wrapping, Harvey?
Well, it's badly torn. The address, he's dead long ago.
Well, look at this headline. German Kaiser warns USA and all U.S. ships bound for England, will be sunk without trace. Why, Harvey, this paper was printed way back in 1917.
Yep, just before we declared war.
I see you have a couple of letters there, too.
Well, one's a bill. Somehow I don't mind that not being delivered all these years.
Who's the other address to, Harvey?
Mrs. Thomas Simpson, 18 Shadow Drive. But she doesn't live on Shadow Drive now, no. Oh, that was a fine street in its day. It's all rooming houses now.
Mrs. Thomas Simpson.
Yeah?
Seems to me like I've heard that name. Where does she live now, Harvey?
No, poor woman. She lives in a little two-room shack out on the Perry Point Road. Poor as a church mouse, you know. Yeah, but proud. My. Won't even let her old friends help her. Not even Judge Mercer.
Judge Mercer? Yeah. Why, that's who I heard mention her name.
Old romance, you know. Her and Judge Mercer. But she won't take help from him or no one.
You know, Harvey, I can't help wondering what it'd be in a letter that's been hidden, undelivered all these years. My nose for news somehow tells me we're going to have a mighty good human interest story for today's edition.
You think so? Mm.
Yes, sir. Now, I think I'll go get it. I'll tell you what, Harvey, you deliver Miss Simpson's letter, and I'll get Judge Mercer to deliver me.
It's awfully nice of you to drive me out here, Judge. Of course, I ought to be writing an editorial, but maybe I'll get what they call inspiration on this trip.
Oh, I never fail to derive inspiration from a visit to Mrs. Simpson.
I'm out to visit her often?
Yes, I'm rather a frequent visitor. You see, Martha, Mrs. Simpson, that is.
Mm-hmm.
Martha and I have been, well, rather fond of one another ever since our school days. Yes, it was 40 years ago that I first noticed that Martha was the most remarkable girl I'd ever seen.
And you've been seeing each other ever since?
Yes.
That's what I call keeping steady company.
Oh, yes, there's one interruption in our visits. That was, of course, the episode of Tom Simpson.
Episode?
It was hardly more than that. Simpson came to town and immediately began a whirlwind courtship that ended in marriage. In less than a year, he had deserted her.
Deserted her?
That's what it amounts to. Simpson made a trip to New York, a business trip, he called it. He never came back. Well, I can't tell you what it's been like for a traveler, not knowing whether the man she married is alive or dead.
Well, didn't she ever get any trace of him at all?
No. His last letter hinted that he was leaving New York on a mysterious errand that was to make his fortune. After that, nothing.
Simpson leave any money behind him?
Only enough for a short time. Oh, Martha needs help badly, but she's too proud to accept it.
Well, after a man's been missing over 7 years, he can be declared legally dead.
I know.
And when a woman's a widow, she could marry again. Marry a man who'd always loved her and like to take care of her. But I suppose you've thought of all that, Judge.
Oh, yes, I've thought of it constantly. And I've spoken to Martha about it. Oh, I could make her happy, Traveler. I know I could. I'd take her out of poverty and unhappiness and spend my life looking after her.
Well, then, what's keeping you two apart?
Martha doesn't believe that Tom Simpson is dead. She's haunted by the idea that someday he'll come back, as suddenly as he went away.
And she take him back as her husband?
Oh, no, no, that's all over. But she won't marry anyone else. She's the kind of woman who means every word she says. And when she said, until death do us part, she meant that.
I see. So it wouldn't be enough for her to declare him legally.
No. I have no doubt myself that he died somewhere long ago.
But just how long ago did he disappear, Judge?
Over 25 years ago. In 1917.
1917?
Yes. Why, Traveler?
Well, it reminds me of something that happened today. Look, Judge, now, suppose Martha did hear from her husband after all these years. Suppose she had a letter from him today. How would you feel about that?
I don't know. Of course, it would be something to be sure that he was alive, but...
The letter might not prove that he was alive, because, you see, the letter might have been written 25 years ago and just delivered today.
Fantastic.
Is it? Well, is that house over there where Martha lives?
Yes, and that's Martha in the doorway.
I see her, Judge. And I see she's holding something in her hand. Something that looks to me like a letter. Well, Sir Harvey, I just wish you could have seen those two reading that letter together. When they came to the part about Tom Simpson knowing that their marriage was a mistake, the judge just held Martha's hand tight. She didn't mind a bit.
And Tom's letter told Martha he was going to try his luck in Europe.
That's right. He was starting a new life under a different name. His letter was written aboard a ship and dropped off just before she sailed. You know, it gave me an idea for an editorial I was writing. Read this.
As we write this, the old post office next door is being torn down. We will miss the old landmark, but its falling walls today gave up a secret they had held for 25 years. In those walls was found a letter that brought us belated news of the death of Tom Simpson, a former citizen of this town. The news will be followed, we predict, by the announcement of great happiness for two of our well-beloved friends. It seems to us there is a lesson here. The old post office passes in order to make room for a fine new structure. And in the same way, even men may pass and make room in the world for tomorrow.
You see, Harvey, now that they know Martha Simpson's free, she's she'll be marrying the man who loves her.
But how do they know Tom Simpson ain't alive?
On account of the ship he took to Europe, Harvey. The ship he wrote the last letter from. You see, he sailed on the Lusitania.
Bob will be back in just a minute, but now let's have another little number from Spike Jones and his City Slickers.
Did you hear about that mountain girl named Gertie? She was pretty, but the boys never took her on a date. What a fate!
Hey, Zeke, if Gertie was so pretty, why'd the fellas always leave her sitting? I get it.
You don't have to have the old, for with life, boy, it will go, and the sin surely vanishes away.
Yes, Spike, the new life boy scent certainly does vanish away quick. That's why I'm so surprised that your friend, the mountain gal named Gertie, hasn't switched to the new life boy yet. Why, women everywhere are switching to life boy now, not only because a daily bath with life boy stops B.O., but there's no perfumey after scent. After a life boy bath, you feel fresh and clean all over. The B.O.'s gone and the soapy scent doesn't linger on. Now, lots of us don't stop to realize that we can be guilty of B.O., so it's really foolish to take chances. Right, Spike?
You don't have to have the old, for with life boy it will go, and the sin surely vanishes away, the life boy way.
And now here he is again, Bob Burns.
You know, a funny thing's been happening to me lately. People stop me on the street and they say, is your name Burns? When I say yes, they just look at me kind of pityingly and they say, no wonder you got all them wrinkles. Being married to Gracie Allen would do that to any man. Well, now, of course, I know they had me mixed up with George Burns, but I thought it'd be interesting to see just what he does have to go through with. So here they are, George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Hello, Bob.
Hello, George. Hello, Gracie.
Hello. My, you're pretty.
Pretty?
She ain't as crazy as I thought she was.
Oh, and you're so big and handsome, so tall and strong.
I am?
Yes. Are you sure you're a Burns?
Gracie, you know Bob Burns. We've known him for years. We all used to be in vaudeville together.
Yeah, Gracie, don't you remember that awkward country boy named Burns who used to get up and tell those corny jokes?
Oh, of course I remember him. I married him.
Oh, no, you've got George and me confused. It's true we both told jokes, but, you know, the difference was George laid him in the aisles and, well, I laid him up on the stage. Maybe it's calling me Bob that's got you confused. In vaudeville, I used the name of Robin.
Oh, Robin Burns.
Yeah, now you remember me?
No. But Robin is such a pretty name, Robin. I wish George was named after a bird.
Oh, fine.
Wouldn't that be romantic? Mr. and Mrs. Pigeon Burns.
Well, I've got the toes for it.
You know, Gracie, I thought sure you'd remember me as Robin because of the famous vaudeville act I did that gave me that name. You remember, George, I used to paint my chest red and stick some feathers in my hair, and when the curtain parted there, I'd be in the middle of the stage sitting in a tree as little Robin Redbreast. And I used to say, springtime, sweet springtime, we greet thee with song.
Oh, sure, I remember. And everyone called you Robin.
Everyone but the audience, they made up their own names.
I wish they had called George Robin. In fact, I think vaudeville was very unfair.
Why?
Well, George got the bird, but you got the name.
Well, now I've got a confession to make, Gracie. It's my own fault that you don't remember me too well, I guess, but because ever since you and George have been married, I've kind of avoided you.
What for?
Oh, lover's wounded pride, I guess.
What are you talking about?
George, you may not have known this, but back when we all used to work together in vaudeville before you married her, I had a crush on Gracie myself.
Well, really, Bob? Well, why didn't you tell me?
Well, I'm... I'm just bashful, I guess. I'm awful bashful. Why, you know, to this day, I don't know what I weigh stripped.
So, Bob, you are my rival for Gracie, and I didn't even know it.
Yeah, I worshipped her from afar. You see, you was a big-time act next to closing, and, well, I followed the bubble dancer.
So did George.
I did not.
Well, I guess we did have a pretty good act, Gracie. We certainly packed the houses.
Yeah. I wish we could have packed the theater.
Yes.
I remember you now, Bob. You used to stand in the wings while George and I were doing our act. You'd make sheep's eyes at me.
That was me. Too awkward and bashful to speak what was in my heart. Oh, if I could have just been suave and sophisticated like I am now.
Oh, brother.
Bob, to tell you the truth, I thought you were very cute.
Well, Gracie, I can ask you this, now that the years have kind of eased the pain in my heart. Why did you have to go and marry George?
Well, I loved him. Also, he was the only one who asked me.
Oh, fine. Gracie, you sound like you wish you'd married Bob Burns instead of me.
Oh, George, that's not true. I'm proud that I married you.
Really?
Well, yes. It showed that I had a mind of my own. I wasn't swayed by public opinion.
Well, thanks, kid.
Say, I bet I know what attracted you to George. It was the fancy clothes he used to wear. You sure were a dude, George.
Yeah, pretty snappy dresser in vaudeville. Remember that loud striped suit I wore with the peg top pants?
Yeah.
It was always too tight for me.
Yeah.
It certainly fits you well now, dear.
Yes.
You see, I didn't have any fancy clothes when I started. I left home with just one pair of pants.
One pair of pants?
Yeah, but after a few years on the stage, I come back home. I said, Mama, I sure come through, didn't I? Mama said, yes, son, bend over, I'll mend them.
Yeah, those were the days. Remember those broken-down theaters we used to play, how small they were?
Well, I remember one theater so small the audience didn't throw tomatoes. They just leaned forward and pushed them in her face.
Oh, poor George. Was his face red?
You know, what we should have done was combine our acts and made it Burns, Allen, and Burns.
Of course, but our acts were nothing alike, Bob. I remember you used to work with the Seal.
Mm-hmm.
The Seal would juggle, play a tune on the pipes, dance, and get a million laughs. All you did was saw my face. Seal did all the work, and you got all the money.
Yeah, that poor Seal.
Yeah. I know just how he felt.
Well, we'd better get along, Gracie. So long, Bob, and we certainly enjoyed our visit.
Oh, goodbye, Robin. I hope Fordville comes back, and then maybe we'll meet all over again.
Yeah.
And who knows? Maybe the next time I'll end up with Mrs. Burns instead of Mrs. Burns.
Well, good night. Well, good night, folks. Good night. I'll see you on your show Tuesday.
The makers of Lifebuoy will again bring you Bob Burns next week at this same time with more about his relatives, more doings of the Arkansas Traveler, and Spike Jones and his city slickers. Remember, Lifebuoy is the only soap especially made to stop... Experts say that even before the war, 3 out of 4 Americans didn't get enough vitamins. Now, with food shortages, you're even more likely to be vitamin deficient. Get extra vitamins. But remember to follow these 2 simple rules. Rule 1, get all the vitamins government experts say are essential. Rule 2, get the balanced formula doctors endorse. Get VIMS. VIMS supply all the essential vitamins and minerals. Get that VIMS feeling. VI for vitamins, double MS for minerals. Get them all in VIMS.
We hope that you've enjoyed this recording. And for more happy listening, please visit otrcat.com.